Bonjour, bonjour, bonjour. Welcome to the SBS Cycling Podcast. And yes, we are back from France. Safe travels, everybody. Are we all happy to be back?
Well, I think when you make it back in one piece, you should be happy.
Have you ever made it back in more than
one piece? No, thankfully. So
luggage did.
Yeah. That's true. Bikes have come in two pieces. Yeah. I think you've had that as well, haven't you?
I have broken bikes.
Yeah, it's an important week because we are already on the third Grand Tour happening in only a few days.
Have they shrunk the gap between the Tour and Vuelta?
Do you know what does this? It's the Tour de France Femme. Yes. We didn't used to the Tour de France Femme and we had this gap, but because it's in between, then it's so short.
I think it's good, actually. You got to keep with the momentum.
Yeah, you just got to keep the fire burning.
Yes.
Otherwise, don't go to sleep.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, I'd love to us to just acknowledge as well some sad news this week: the passing of Finlay Tarling. This is absolutely tragic.
Yes.
As an ex-pro, both of you must be touched even more than anybody else.
I mean, look, I did not know Josh Tarling had a younger brother.
Yeah, me neither.
Sadly, until we hear about this incident. And so you more think about the people that are closely connected to him, and you can see the outpouring of love. It's tragic. Mm. It's tragic, and we can't comment too much on. All we know is that it was Vuelta, Portugal. A car entered the course coming in the opposite direction.
He was dropped from the peloton.
Yeah.
So the officials thought, or whoever opened the road thought the riders had gone through.
Yeah.
But obviously there was still him on the road, and that's just tragic.
Oh, it is a tragedy. 19 years of age. So I think all we can do as a cycling community is, you know, and no doubt, as I said, ones closest to him, they wrap their arms around the family. And I think they're already setting up a fund. The parents, I saw they made a comment, you know, how grateful they are for the outpouring of love. But it would be numbing for them, no doubt, and for the cycling community, isn't it?
It just makes you feel a bit,
very flat.
Yeah, I don't know. Just it's the bit about our sport that I really dislike.
Mm.
How close you can get and how we lose cyclists. At all levels.
The talk straight after about helmet safety. When the unions came out and there was a lot of talk about helmet safety and that the UCI needs to do better about having norms that are just different from the safety you can get on a commuter helmet. What do you guys make out of this?
I think it's too knee-jerk. Yeah, I think it's too early and it's knee-jerk reaction. I don't think they don't know. They don't know the circumstances. We know the basic circumstances, which we've just said, the vehicle hitting him head on. But you can't make a statement about. They don't know if his helmet was a certain quality or not. So, I think it's a little bit poor if they've come out with quick statements like that.
Yeah, and I don't think in this circumstance a helmet would have changed anything.
Yeah.
The problem was that there was a car on the course.
Yeah. The problem was not the helmet.
The cyclist being hit head on by a vehicle, nothing's going to protect you.
No, that's right. So,
absolutely. Well, our thoughts to the family, of course, it's already a tragic moment. Let's talk about what's happening this week, though, before we talk about some of the results. But the big thing this week is, of course, the Vuelta. Vuelta starting in Monaco, starting on SBS as well. Micah, you'll be commentating on most of it, some of it?
Yeah, I'm doing two parts.
This man is going back to Europe.
No, I'm trying not to think about it. Yes. No, I'm doing the first 5 days and then the last five or six. But Monaco start with a prologue. Short time trial. That would have been right up your alley, Grace.
Super technical from the looks of it.
Yeah.
It'll be like, I don't know if they go on some of the F1 circuit there.
They did it. Tour de France start in Monaco.
Long time ago. That's
a long time ago now. I was there and they used a portion or a big chunk of the F1 course, I remember.
Whenever they do this, I think it's a bit weird. You know, when they were in Magny-Cours this year on the circuit, that's a bit weird. Remember that year when they had the placing? They had like pole position.
Yes, and then the placing? Yeah, that's a bit weird. That was a flop.
It was worth a try, but it just didn't work.
And it makes bikes look so slow.
They do, because you're used to seeing cars at 250, 300 kilometres an hour, and then you see a bike at even 60, and it's just like, what are they doing? They're not trying.
But Monaco starts. Yeah. It's good that the Vuelta sort of always tried different things. I mean, all those Grand Tours have tried different starts. We see like the Giro start in Israel, started in Hungary.
Yeah.
So what do you make of the distance, though? Like, what's going to happen between the transfer Monaco to Spain?
Well, there's no rest. There's no extra rest day.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's only the two rest days, which is what we normally have now. Sometimes when they have that the Israel start or Budapest yeah. or Hungary, the Giro I'm talking about, they throw in a third one. So they do starts on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then Monday is the first rest day, and then they have carry on and have their two. I mean, it's not that far around, really, to get to Spain.
Mm.
So they'll weave their way. And when you look at the actual map of the Vuelta, the course, it's all I get my coast mixed up. It's east. Well, it's east. It's eastern part of the country, so yeah. east coast predominantly. Not much in the middle, nothing up north. Galicia and some of those areas, Angleroo and those mountains mm-hmm. that we've, you know, become very synonymous with the race. And then it finishes in Granada, so it's like they just sort of snake their way down yeah, that sort of east it. Side. Yeah, so it's a really different, I would say, very different Vuelta course to what we've seen for quite some time.
It's really hilly.
Yes.
Apparently, it's got the most climbing of all the Grand Tours this year.
Yeah, it's like...
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa, okay.
You might need to fact check me on that, but...
I don't think there's a huge amount of summit finishes, but yeah. it's like, you know, four hilly days, six mountainous days. Hang on. What's the difference between a hilly day and a mountainous
yeah,
day?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
One's just harder. And then there's one or two summits. You're right, though. It is littered with... Got some big mountains. I think they go up to about 2.5 okay. in terms of altitude gain. Around that, that'll be the high point. But you're right, Grace. It is just littered with little short little 5K summit finishes and kickers.
And not many opportunities for sprinters.
No.
So before we talk about the lineup, because there's some very interesting lineups here as we will discover, heat. Would that be an issue? Like you and I and all of us, we did experience that heat in the summer in Europe. It's still quite hot. Spain and going Granada is wet.
Oh, Granada's, yeah, 40 degrees.
So
yeah.
So the riders that have done the Tour de France and are now ending up on the Vuelta, have they got an advantage or a disadvantage to have been exposed to racing to that level of heat?
Well, you got recent experience.
Oh, yeah, I don't know because it's been now... quite a few weeks since they finished the Tour de France, and heat acclimation, the benefits that you get from it, you can only hold on to them for like I don't know a week or so. Okay. So if they've continued training in the heat, then yeah, it'll be fine. Mm. But if they've gone, look, I'm sick of the heat. I'm going to find a cold environment. I'm going up to altitude. Then they'll lose some of that adaptation.
Okay, and would they have had to go back to this adaptation like a week before the start?
A week.
Like right now they are in heat chambers and sleeping in heat.
I would say so.
Yeah?
If you're doing the Vuelta, you'd want to be doing some heat training. Like it's so hot in Europe, it's hard to escape anyway. Most will just be doing it because they're training outside. But if they're up in the mountains for a period, then they probably need to do some extra heat stuff when they come down.
There's one thing I don't know for you guys, but we came back here from France. I complained about the heat. I had zero appreciation from what we got for people. They go through winter.
Yeah, zero sympathy.
Zero sympathy on the temperature.
And then we have a 17-degree day yesterday, which is...
It was 20.
Was it?
20?
Yeah. It was very, very mild.
Let's talk about the contenders here.
Yeah.
Because, well, the first name, Tadej Pogacar, is here.
What? So contenders for second and third.
Yeah, exactly. when you are riding the Vuelta, your contract, some riders' contracts can still be on the line.
Yeah.
They're hoping for these 3 weeks to be able to showcase something. And then you got Tadej coming up. The morale goes... Wait, it must be.
Well, you got to find a way.
Yeah.
You got to find a way. You got to be an opportunist and find a way. And it's a little bit like the theme, Grace, at the men's. You know, you'd interview some of the guys at the start line, and this was really common. And when you think about it, it's the first time I think I've ever heard it about someone so dominant. You know, how are you going today? What, you know, what's the plans today? And they'd say, well, it depends what UAE want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if UAE decided they wanted to win, the other teams would be like, well, there's nothing we can do. We've just got to... You know, look for another stage when UAE decide to let the break go and have some glory. So that's all you'd be hoping. But then Pog is human. He's not untouchable. He's off the back of the tour. He looks like he's finished it fresh as a daisy. But strange things happen sometimes, don't they?
Yeah. I want to know if Tade just wants to go to Granada and it was an easy trip, you know, starting in Monaco, yeah, finishing in Granada. Yeah, it's basically like, may as well do the 3 weeks.
It's a free holiday. To just have
a yeah. Erska's like, yeah, I wouldn't mind a holiday down there at the end.
What is he doing the Vuelta, though?
Well, he hasn't won it.
Yeah.
It was his first Grand Tour.
Podium?
He finished podium. Yeah. He was third and he won a couple of stages. And he got better in his very first Grand Tour. He got better in the last week.
This is the tour where you discovered him.
Oh, it was astounding. For me, it was astounding. As a 19-year-old, and he started to challenge Roglic, who was, you know, at the top of his game. And so, you know, the history shows, and this is why he is where he is now. But he wants to win it.
Yeah.
He's ticking the boxes, Pog. You know, I don't think he's someone who sits there and looks about historical, you know, results.
Don't you think so?
Well, I don't think he's fixated on it. No. But I think he's like, you know what? I want to win these monuments. I want to tick all the off the big ones.
Also, that he likes, you know, mixing things up, and it's something that he hasn't achieved yet. So it's just like, well, it's sort of boring coming back and winning the tour every single year.
Yeah,
let's win something new.
Yeah.
Walter.
Wouldn't you love to just be able to get inside his brain and understand how he ticks? Because it is. It's exactly like that. Other riders will say, right, you know, Tour de France is the biggest event, so I've got to keep going back there and win it and win as many times as I can, if you're lucky enough.
Like we saw in history. This is how it's been so far. In our lifetime, this is how it's been.
Whereas he just, I mean, you know, and he's got the ability to say, okay, I'm going to try and do the Giro Tour double, and then he does it. You know,
So just going a bit wider on this, is this why Jonas Vingegaard is not resuming his season, do you think?
No, I don't think so. No, I think it's fully injury.
So Jonas won't be here. He's stopped his season. He's going to come back next year.
Yeah.
So there is no drive for him to come back any earlier. Or is this really physically he cannot come back?
No, I think physically. Yeah. I think if he was capable, but they probably look at it and they're like, I mean, you know, Grace... Yeah, it's would have been similar, but it hasn't changed much. Unless you can be at your absolute physical best. When you're a star rider like that, if you're not at 100%, you know, Jonas, he could probably ride the Vuelta and finish 10th.
Yeah.
Maybe not. You know, it depends how his injuries. But he doesn't want to – he wants to go there to challenge to win it.
Okay.
So if he can't challenge to win it, the team and him will say, well, let's not bother.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the contenders – outside of Tadej Pogacar, because Tadej Pogacar is, of course, as we know, the main favorite for this one. Let's talk about Red Bull. Red Bull goes with Roglic. Is that a surprise? And Luke Tocqueville that we had in this podcast, he's going to be there as a support. Surprise that Rog is coming back?
Leader? He loves the Vuelta, doesn't he?
He's enough time.
It's his second home.
But I don't know. I guess he hasn't really been able to target a Grand Tour this year. There's actually transfer news on him as well.
Yeah, he hasn't raced much.
That he's moving from Red Bull. So, I think it's his opportunity to
close the chapter with Red Bull and make sure that he closes it well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's interesting all these. I did see a comment this morning on one of the cycling Insta feeds, and it's like Roglic now enters the race, but with revised ambitions. And I didn't read because I went, it's clickbait.
Yeah.
How do they know? How do they know what his ambitions are? So I try not to get, I try not to get too bogged down with, you see a lot of this banter. Roglic is a star bike rider, and it will not surprise me at all if he challenges for overall victory. Mm.
Because you never know, like you said, you never know. Pog might have enough day, enough week.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
he may not actually have the intensity he wants to.
Yes,
to have that when he puts it in winning a Tour de France, he may not have that as well. Having said this, is Pogacar.
So. Yeah, it's almost like we're wishing.
Do you know?
We're wishing that to happen, so it'll be a closer contest.
I was saying the sentence. I'm like, you're making no sense.
Yeah, no. It's more optimism that someone can challenge him. I think that's all it is.
The addition of Luke Tocqueville in that team, we spoke to him earlier on, as I say, he's really a good back rider, Luke Tocqueville. What can he learn in something like this, being alongside of Roglic in that environment, but also be close to Pogacar and trying to compete and move the puzzle pieces to try to play against someone like Pog?
Yeah, I think it's a great opportunity for Luke. He's, I don't know, we saw him compete really well, and he was in a leadership position at the
Dauphiné, that's the other,
whatever it's called now.
Yeah.
Tour du Rhône Alpes, or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
But this is like a different experience where, well, first of all, it's his first Grand Tour.
Yeah.
So the length of it is huge. And I think the Vuelta is like a good one to start with, even though there's, you know, it can often be course-wise the hardest, or like the terrain is really difficult. The heat's really difficult. But then it's a less high-pressure environment for him to just like learn the ropes, really practice being, super domestique. And have a leader that's like been in the peloton for a long time now and done this a lot of times. So I think, it's going to be good.
Yeah, I think let's follow Luke Tocqueville.
Well, you can't buy what he'll learn. You know, if he said, I want to buy that experience, you can't. So for him to have that. Yeah. And it's like these young riders, both men and women, they're a new breed that they're aware of that. So Luke Tuckwell will be very aware of the fact that he's got Roglic, who's a superstar, proven at Grand Tour level. You know, whereas...
Proven at the Vuelta.
Yeah, proven at the Vuelta. Whereas other young riders, I don't know, 10, 20 years ago, yes, some of them are aware of it, but I just think the younger generation now are so attuned to what they can get out of an experience.
Some of them are.
Yeah, some of them. Not all of them. No.
Yeah. What other Australians can we expect? Well, seven, eight?
There's eight or nine. I'll look at my phone right now because it's not confirmed, and they always confirm late. But Caden Groves.
Yes.
He's back from injury. He's had a rocky sort of season, crashed out of the Giro, didn't he? So it's good to see him back. He's had big success at the Vuelta in
less
the past.
Sprints, there's a lot less.
A lot less sprints, true. But he's for a sprinter, he's also versatile.
Yeah. Well, the stage of the Tour de France that he won was not a sprint.
Solo, yeah. Oscar Chamberlain, Callum Scottson for Decathlon. Alistair McCallough for EF. So that's good news. Then we skim it down a bit more. There's a couple of Kiwis. Luke Tuckwell, we mentioned. Finn Fisher-Black, also on that team, New Zealander. So he's coming back from injuries as well. Hamish McKenzie, Rudy Porter for Team Jake Alula. And they've got a real mixed bag. Chris Hamilton for Picnic Post NL. Chippers, do they need a win?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And then Jay Vine, obviously, with UAE.
Yeah.
All of those... Some are confirmed, some aren't, of those Aussies, but they're on a long list at the moment. So hopefully we'll get all of them.
Let's talk about Jayco, though. You know, when we received the team, I like it was prefaced by a very young team. There's no one in there that is really as a contender for the win. That's for sure. They're going for stage win, but are they really? Can they?
I think they can.
It's a very young team.
It is. But there are some guys in there that have been pro now for a number of years. Alessandro Covi, Yasha Sutilin, he's been in the World Tour now for a few years. They're not riders that are...
Flagship.
Know, we're going to be betting on a rider there that will win a stage. Paul Doubleau, I thought he was super impressive last year at the Giro or the Vuelta? I get mixed up. The young English guy. I think if anyone can win a stage, it's him. You talk about all the hilly days. Mm. He's a guy for the climb. So, but yeah, they're not. Is it a fair argument to say there's two Aussies in there, so that is good. But it's almost like it's not an Australian team.
Yeah.
It lacks the Aussie depth, doesn't it?
And it shows here.
Yes, it shows more so at the Vuelta.
At the Tour, at the Giro, it was a bit different. But here it shows. It really shows. And when we look at the list, there's not that many Australian flags in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if... I'm interested to see where, like, the roster overall for Jayco heads next year. And with Joe Ryan's input, being withdrawn.
We're all waiting to hear, aren't we?
Yeah.
An official, And you look at the roster, say, here, Vuelta, and, yes, the tour was different. Michael Matthews, et cetera. We know those guys are on some fairly big wages. Mm. In the women's team, I'm not sure it'd be big wages there, Grace.
They don't have, like, really star riders.
No, you had Mavi Garcia last year, but she obviously departed.
But I haven't heard that any of the women are on, like, I actually have no idea.
Yeah, so purely looking at the names, and it's not disrespecting these athletes. To me, they're all stars. But, there's no, apart from the few in the men's, but, to me it says that they're, Gerry Ryan is getting ready to exit.
Yeah, it'll be
in the next couple of
years. We haven't heard any new Aussie signings for the team for next year, have we?
No, I don't think so. Not new, no. I don't believe so.
Last season, there were a lot of riders going to the development team, moving up from Dev to World Tour. And, it's been pretty quiet this year.
It's been pretty quiet. And, one exit I have heard, and we'll talk more about transfers, I guess, Paternoster. She's confirmed leaving, I think, Human Powered Health.
Yeah,
is it? So, a couple of departures. Mm-hmm. So, interesting.
But the market is still very young. We've Q36.5 is buying left, right and centre as well. But that Mercato is it's pretty young yet.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, and then there's all this talk about, and here I'm bringing it up for you, Christoph.
I was like, who's going to say
I'm leading you out, Paul Sexus. He's staying put, though.
Yeah, but this is the thing. He was always going to stay.
Yeah, he was exactly.
It's a known news when he was he basically just confirmed that his contract ends in 27.
Which we all knew that.
Which we all knew at the beginning. So the big question is what's happening next.
Yeah.
So it's funny that how all the articles were like, he finally settles in on. No, he's already.
He was already settled. Yeah.
I guess there was the chance that he'd break his contract.
Yeah, I guess
some other team would buy him out, but.
His manager is
I think it's probably shows good character that he's stayed.
Yeah, or maybe he's a bit smart as well in terms of he's worth this now. If he carries on winning stuff and podiuming and challenging Pogacar, his net worth might actually be completely different in 6 or 8 or 10 months' time than it is now.
What do managers take? We talked about this during the tour, 10%? I think. No, is it that much? It's like six or?
It depends. The higher value athletes, it's a smaller percentage. So, but like on smaller contracts, it would be closer to 10.
Okay, so let's split the difference.
He's on 8.
No, let's say he's on 5. The manager gets 5%. If he signs for 30 million, 10% is 3 million. 5% is 1.5. That's not bad. I'd have one client.
And then the manager retires.
Before the rider.
You sign him on a 6-year deal. You're getting 1.5 million euros a year. I mean, I don't think he's going to get 30 million. That was a talk, wasn't it? 30
that
million.
Was a talk. That was a talk.
I actually think.
That's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. And I think it would be bad for the sport.
Yeah.
It's too much. It's way too much.
What will Decathlon do at the Vuelta, though? If we just go back to the racing.
Well, let's have a look at their lineup, shall we? No Sexus is there.
Two Aussies.
Yes, of course. Oscar Chamberlain.
And Callum Scottson.
Well, Callum Scottson will be that classic workhorse.
So Felix Gull is probably their general classification.
Yeah, and after a great Giro, career best form.
And he's leaving, I think.
I think you're right.
I think he's leaving.
He's going to Tudor.
Yes.
We think.
I think that's what it is.
Matt Riccitiello, the young American kid, he's a young up-and-coming climber. We've seen him already. They've got a good squad, actually. Gregor Mühlberger. You mentioned Felix Gull. No, they've got a nice team. Mm-hmm. I think they've got a nice team.
Quick diversion on this one. They announced that they will start a women's team. What does that change in the game? Although there will not be World Tour, there will be second tier to start with. But what does that change anything in the game? And if you are FDJ, which you are the prime French team, you're winning the Tour de France with Demi, all the owners, are you starting to tremble a little bit seeing Decathlon coming with all the millions and all the money into that game?
Oh, I don't think so. And, even though that you know, saying they're starting a women's team, it doesn't mean that they're putting the same resources behind it mm-hmm. as the men's. And yeah, it won't, you can't go straight to World Tour, so it'll be Conti or pro team for however long. And I don't know, I feel like even though women's cycling is moving at such a rapid pace, the depth in the number of riders is not there to keep feeding these new big teams. Like, there's just not.
There's too many big teams. Do you think so? It's becoming overcrowded in terms of the budget on bigger teams?
I think it's all growing, as you just said, and we've talked about it. It's just growing so fast exponentially.
Yeah. And you look at the Tour de France Femme, the biggest race on the women's calendar. Mm. There's, the likes of FTJ Suez that have everything going, you know, big budget, star riders. And then you've got the wild card teams that are showing up in camper vans.
Yes.
There were two. Like... There were two, yeah.
Petite Entreprise and Mayenne.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you see something? Sorry to interrupt, but did you see the result sheet of the earnings?
Yes.
The sim where FDJ won so much and then Mayenne got zero.
Yeah.
Yep.
They got no bonus point, nothing. Zero, zero, zero.
I mean, that's not too different. It's not too different to the men's when you think about it. And because as we're just talking about this, I was thinking about the final stage of the women's and it decimated, didn't it? It was a tough stage, to be fair. It was, you know, a pretty damn tough final stage. So you think about the morale, et cetera, for some teams, what's there to gain, what's there to lose, all this sort of stuff. But then you look at the men's final stage on the Champs-Élysées with just a little cobbled hill three times, that field was decimated.
Yeah, totally, yeah.
So, yeah, there's an element I go, oh, well, you know, maybe we need to, you know, take stock and not sort of go, oh, the depth isn't there in the women's.
It's more that there's not enough, like, it drops off quite quickly. So you've got, like, you know, the star riders and then you've got the really strong domestiques and then I feel like bringing more teams in, there's just not enough to choose from. It might spread it out a little bit, but just the number of professional women is still quite small compared to the men.
And then also, and I won't throw you completely under the bus because I won't mention. No, it's nothing bad.
We're just back.
No, it's nothing bad. No.
You can edit this out.
Yeah. No, you said to me once a couple of years ago, we were talking about a particular team, a fairly big women's team, and I just remember you saying, yeah, but they skimp on personnel, so Swan Ewers, mechanics.
They still do.
And it really surprised me because from the outside, they are one of the biggest teams. They were the biggest team in the women's peloton or one of and most successful. And then when you said that to me, I was like, wow. I was surprised because you saw the big team bus, the truck, the vehicles, and you said, they skimp on their staff. So there's that element too, I guess, isn't there?
Small rosters, like.
Yeah.
A lot of the teams for the number of races on the calendar have small rosters. It's hard to even do a double program.
And riders are getting tired, they're getting sick, etc. Yep. So, a
couple of other transfers I want to mention. Arnaud Delis is leaving Lotto.
Yes.
I don't know where he's rumored.
I can tell you because.
Is it been official?
I did.
Macca always.
Hot
on the gossip.
Came. I saw it on. And look, I'm going to give PCS a mention. Uh-huh. We should. Absolutely. Because they are an amazing website. So if you guys are listening, we utilize you a lot. And now I can't.
But Arnaud Delis,
he's definitely
leaving. He had a very rough couple of years, but has he still got it? Has he still got something in him that can make him? Because
Tudor,
he's going to Tudor.
Sorry, that's what it says here.
Yeah. Tudor's mopping up a lot of.
They are.
Yeah. I think it's really difficult for sprinters. We see it time and time again. They have their moment in the sun, and then they lose it. And it's very hard to come back. They change teams, try different things, but I think once you've lost your mojo as a sprinter.
Well, speaking of sprinters, the big one is Fabio Jakobsen.
Yes.
And that is confirmed, Visma. I believe.
Yeah.
Effective immediate.
It is immediate.
Right.
For Visma.
That could be a great story. I hope so. I'd love to see him get back and get some success. But I'm surprised they've taken
sprinting, Visma? When was the last time they went into a sprint?
Visma?
Yeah.
Well, without Van Aert.
Or with Coy.
Yeah.
True.
Last year?
Yeah, yeah.
No, he won. I'm kidding. He won earlier this year, didn't he?
No, Coy's gone to, he's decathlon now.
He's decathlon now.
Come on, get with the program, girl.
Has it already jet been lag. eight months of 26? No, I'm still in 2025.
My point is they have Laporte and stuff, but do they even sprint? They
know no, it's culture. True.
They haven't got sprinting culture, have they?
I'm surprised they've taken him.
Yeah.
Because his career is at, it's hit rock bottom. I would say Jakobsen, but good on him. And the other one, Seb Berwick to Pinarello.
Yes, this one is...
That's confirmed.
This one is interesting, right? Because he went to Caja Rural, we spoke, but that was the breakout.
It was sort of the lifeline.
Yeah, but it was a redemption, like a lifeline is a better word, actually. But he done so well at the Tour. He done so well at being team members and also being the super teammate and so on. So that is actually an interesting sign.
It's a great, great story.
It just goes to show that, getting into those smaller teams can actually sometimes be the perfect pathway. If you go into a small team, you get, they get a wild card entry to one of the big tours, and then you can show yourself in front of the biggest crowd, and that paves the way.
Mm. Only a few weeks to ask him for a jersey, mate, because those cars.
Oh, yes, Seb. Seb, if you're listening, and I've sort of put on a couple throughout the tour, too much tarte de flette and nice French wine. So probably.
You see the S.
Probably to be an M. Mate, those sizes are top. You've seen those jerseys. I know. Like this. it's an M or an L, I think, Seb, if you're listening.
So Seb, an M on Kahua.
And I'd settle for a cap.
Yeah.
I'd settle for a cap.
They're impossible to find these caps.
Yes, you know? I know. That's why we want them.
You can't buy them.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Anything else you guys want to mention?
Oh, gee, well, what's coming up? What's back end of the season for the women? Like, what's the
big... Tour of Britain at the moment.
Ah, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Which is pretty cool.
Wotan Classic.
Yeah.
There's a Bretagne Classic as well happening.
The French
Bretagne Classic. Yeah. Yeah, Tour of Britain, Bretagne Classic.
And then there's...
Tour of Britain would be on SBS, by the way.
Yes, it is.
Stream on SBS, on SBS On Demand.
Actually, can we just touch on that event for a second? Like, it's had some... And I think more so... Well, both the men's and the women's, but I think the women's the last few years had trouble getting TV rights. Like, did you race it? And was it a well-run event when you raced it, if you did?
Yeah. When I raced it, it was like leading the way in terms of quality of race organization, safety, broadcast, like everything was, at the top. But then, they started struggling with funding, and there was a year where literally like 3 weeks before it was meant to go ahead, they had to cancel.
Yes. That was like 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Yeah.
And then since then, they've just been struggling each year to get the sponsorship. But it's back, I think, pretty much, full at its best almost. It's being broadcast on SBS.
It's on SBS On Demand, yeah.
On Demand. Yeah.
Question here. Do the effect that the Tour de France Femmes will start in Britain, Tour de France Men as well, will start in Britain, but Tour de France Femmes will start in Britain as well, does that also sort of inject interest, money, and need for a local tour to go up into the Tour of Britain?
I wouldn't be surprised if that's been the catalyst for, sponsors to come on board, or even maybe there's been a bit of government funding come through from UK.
Britain needs this though, because they were dominating for so long in some of the racing
it's a funny place because
it is.
Cycling's
does it. Yeah. I live there.
Well, you live there for a number of years. It's part of Europe, but it's not.
Yeah.
And cycling is a popular sport. You'd argue it's more popular than Australia. Yeah,
but it's not.
But it's not.
Yeah.
And then there's times when you're like, actually, they struggle more than a country like Australia to get sort of recognition. And
the national championships are not on TV.
Nah.
It's all behind paywall. The whole cycling
Tour de France has just been, we've talked about this, ITV, who was the equivalent of SBS for 30 years, had the Tour de France. They've lost the rights.
They haven't even lost the rights. They didn't take on the rights.
They didn't take the rights. You're right.
The rights were there to take and they didn't take
and
them.
They didn't even put a bid in. Yeah. So it's a really interesting psyche, I think, UK and cycling. So, but I like that with what
it's,
you
it's
said.
It's like every 10 years they need a bit of a injection.
Well,
of,
and while we're on that subject, across the Atlantic, the US, we need the US market.
Yes.
We need some of these great men's and women's tours to come back or new ones to start.
They need to have more interest than gravel. All they watch is gravel over there. They need to go back on the road.
We are showing the gravel worlds in Nanup, in WA, SBS. So we're doing our bit.
No, you're right. The US needs to be also a major player. And these are the riders.
Yeah, they have.
The riders, come on.
It's like the riders deserve more.
Yeah.
They don't even have their own... Do they at the moment? Like a proper national sort of tour?
They used to have the Tour of California.
Yeah, that's got... And now it's like just random sort of domestic level.
It is.
They've all had to drop down from UCI to...
Bring back Tour de Trump.
I was going to say, thinking there was...
You have heard of this, Grace? Tour de Trump.
I've heard of it, but I don't know much about it.
It was a big tour. It was crazy.
We actually met the guy that won Tour de Trump.
Raul Alcalá.
Yeah,
The Mexican, of course.
He won Tour de Trump.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen...
A Mexican.
Get on YouTube. There's an interview with the man himself.
Yeah.
Not Raul Alcalá. Well, there might be one, but the other man, Donald Trump.
About Tour de Trump.
About Tour de Trump. Yeah.
So did he personally sponsor the race?
He actually ran the race,
I think. I don't reckon he sponsored it. Let's not get too political, but I don't think he put his own money into the race.
But it was his name, Tour de Trump.
Yeah, it was. And it was actually a big tour and successful, and all the big pro teams and the big stars would go there.
Wow.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah, you learn something every day
yeah.
on this podcast. Thank you for joining in. But until then, it's bye for now.